Welcome to Conversation Changers. We are a group of people who know what it is like to live in poverty in the midst of many of Canada's privileges. The stories you'll hear come from Bridges Peterborough. We bring together people from all walks of life to learn about bridging the gap between poverty and privilege. We hope our stories get you thinking about changing your conversations about poverty. And now from Peterborough, Laura and Todd.
Hi, I'm Todd.
Hi, I'm Laura. On today's show, we're taking a deep dive into storytelling. As someone tells their story, the details often become clear. Today's raconteur is Lynn Smith-Reeve.
What the heck are you calling Lynn?
It's French for storyteller, Todd. We were trying to come up with a way to say storyteller less.
Oh, right. Yeah. Anyway, I have known Lynn for a long time. Lynn was a co-facilitator in my first bridging team. Several years ago, and is a very captivating speaker.
In our weekly storytelling meetings, we're given a choice of questions to answer. This remarkable story was first spoken on May 20th and revised on May 27th.
So Henry and I had been living out west with the... I've got to think about how many kids we had at this point. No, I don't know where we were living. Came back and stayed at my... We ended up living at my parents' place for some reason, again. I can't remember because there were a couple times we came back there. But my mom, I think you all know she had schizophrenia. And so she did not too bad most of the time, function not too bad. She'd been on medication for years, so I never knew that she was ill when I was growing up. Had no idea at all. And then in 1987, I think, she believed she'd been healed. And so she quit taking her medication. And all of a sudden I have this mother that, I don't know, like she comes out with these bizarre things, or her makeup's been drugged. The Pentecostal church has planted cameras in her bedroom, and like just really wild things, you know. And so that was really hard, because that then I felt like I'd at some level lost my mom then, and I certainly couldn't leave my children with her anymore. Not because I thought she'd hurt them, but because I was afraid she'd take off with them, thinking she was protecting them. But anyways, we ended up back at her house. Oh, I know, we came. Henry'd had pancreatic surgery in Victoria. They'd taken out a piece of his pancreas, and they thought it would fix the situation. But we got back to Ontario, and he'd been going to university out there, finally got to university, but it was on a year system, and he had gotten so sick that he'd lost the year. So they did the surgery. We got back to Ontario, and we are planning, he's going to go to Waterloo in the fall, but I guess it was May or something, and the Dax had started again. I'm messing up the story. Anyways, he'd been in the hospital for a month and came back and was on a lot of morphine. And so he's kind of, you know, not quite with it all the time. But he was going upstairs or something, or he was scolding one of the girls or something. And then my mom started accusing him of sexually abusing our children. And so anyways, I just loaded up him. So I guess we had five kids, all the kids in the car. We had an old broken down Volkswagen van. And so I was running it on like transit, you know, the 15-day stickers you could get, or 10-day for $15 or whatever. And we went over to my... No, I'd had an inkling something was going to happen. I don't know why, but I'd had an inkling. So I'd been talking, had to do a run to Lindsay. We were living in Bob Cage. My parents lived outside Bob Cage. Did a run to Lindsay and saw my friend Judy. And she said, well, if anything happens, you know where the key to my apartment is, blah, blah, blah. And then, so then when everything happened, we ended up at a friend's place for a little while. And then Henry went in for his operation. And then, you know, basically the kids and I were homeless for a while. But how did I get out of it? the support of friends. And I remember what we were staying at one friend's house. She had extra bedrooms in the basement and let us stay there, me and the kids, and Henry's in the hospital. He almost died. We think he's dying. It's really awful. And I came back to her house and I sat there and I was crying, and she had nothing she could say to me, but she sat and cried with me. And I felt like I'm not alone. Like, it's so weird. I'm homeless, but I'm not alone. And so then I had known the Baptist minister from Bob Cajun. I ran into her somewhere and she said, "Lynn, the manse is empty. Go ask them if you can stay in the manse." And so I got up the nerve to ask someone I knew who was on the board. And she said, "Oh, well, I don't think so. We're getting a minister." And I said, "Well, it'll just be for a month or two." And so she went to the board and asked. They didn't really know me, you know. I didn't go to that church, but they let us stay in the manse. They never even charged us for hydro. And the Anglican priest, and I never was Anglican either, he was running around town getting us a fridge and a stove. And it was just incredible. So anyways, that was one of the shit storms I lived through.
Wow, what a story of perseverance. I'm impressed with Lynn's courage in telling this story. She lived this experience while homeschooling her five children.
We wanted to share this story with you because of its inspirational nature. It's also a perfect demonstration of a term we learned, tyranny of the moment.
The first one, what if anything do you credit for getting you through the shit show you described last week? After trying to tell that story and then like messing up the timeline and everything, and after, you know how you tell a story and then all the details or some details come back to you later, and I realized that I said that those people didn't know me that let me stay in that manse, let my family stay in that manse, and that wasn't entirely true, which made me think of social capital and bonding capital and bridging capital and all that stuff, because I had went to a small group at that church a few times, and I sort of knew somebody there, and I volunteered at a children's, all the churches work together on a big children's program in the summer, and I volunteered at that. So a few people knew me, but not very many. And so when I had met that woman who told me to go to the church and ask, well, she told me to go to a specific person and ask, and that person took it to the church board. But like, again, most of the people on that board wouldn't have known me personally or anything, but just how that the power of that social capital or bonding, bridging, whatever way you want to put it, that those people helping us, it's just like amazing. And then, as I said afterward, they never gave us any bill for hydro or anything. We were there just for 2 months, because the other details, we'd got back from the West and Henry was on, he'd been in the hospital for a month and was on at home on a lot of morphine for a month waiting for his surgery date. And it was while he was in the hospital with the surgery date, we desperately needed somewhere to be, or while he was in the hospital after his surgery, and he was so, we didn't know if he was going to make it. But when he got out, another friend just said, "You know what? What are you going to do? Stay on welfare or go to school?" Because he couldn't work, but he would be able to go to school. And so, because he couldn't physically work. So that's what we ended up doing. And that's a wild and crazy story too. But just, I felt bad after because I'm like, all the details are coming to me. I thought, oh, I misrepresented, they didn't know me from anybody. Well, of course that wasn't true, but anyway, so I had to fix my story. So I'm glad Leanne asked the question again.
Listening to Lynn's story, I hear the need for human connections. In the Getting Ahead program, we learn to call that social capital.
Sometimes in retelling a story, the clarifications are personally valuable. Next week, we'll have another two-part story.
And now, Laura's quote of the week.
This week's quote is from Max Planck, who said, "When you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change."
Thanks, Laura, and thank you for listening.
This podcast was brought to you by the generous support of the Ontario Trillium Foundation, the people of Greenwood and the United Church of Canada, the City of Peterborough, the Mau Community Centre, and many individual sponsors, people like you who want to change the conversation. Our team for this podcast was Laura, Greg, Todd, and LA. Our storyteller was Lynn, and thank you for listening. We can be found at Bridges Peterborough.com.